Welcome to our series on social capital. My name is Tristan Claridge and I'm the Director of the Institute for Social Capital. And I'm joined by Lyndon Robison, Emeritus Professor of Agricultural and Resource Economics at Michigan State University. Welcome, Lyndon.
Thank you, Tristan. Good to be here and good to see you.
Lyndon and I share a passion for the concept of social capital and we each have a long history of work on the concept. However, we have different perspectives. Lyndon from an economics background, and my background is in sociology and social theory. But our different backgrounds and perspectives make for interesting conversations and engaging debate. So in this episode, we'll discuss what is social capital. There are many ideas, but what can we actually agree on? So Lyndon, let's start with why there is so much diversity in social capital definitions.
Well, I think we come from, as social scientists, we come from different backgrounds and we have different questions and we focus on different evidence. And that's going to naturally lead to lots of different views on what this concept that we call social capital really is.
Yeah, and certainly when you've talked in the past, you've talked about how from your perspective and from an economic perspective, you hoped social capital would do certain things. And perhaps people coming from different disciplines are looking for different kinds of explanations from the concept. And so perhaps that's one of the explanations for why people end up defining social capital in different ways.
It surely is true in my case, because as an economist, I'm interested in factors that influence the terms and level of exchanges of goods and services, and why we tend to favor exchanges with one group and not another group. And so for me, what motivated me to start looking beyond the traditional neoclassical economic background that was my disciplinary focus, what accounts for why people trade on different terms and levels. And the best explanation, the one that seemed to appear in lots of different kind of exchanges, were what's the relationship between the people that are exchanging goods and services. And one of the first attempts to try and put a number to this, to measure it, was examining the terms and level of trade of used cars. And to us, it seems obvious, perhaps, that we would trade on different terms and levels with a family member, or even more so a family member that maybe was having hard times, and we wouldn't expect them to trade at an arm's length price. So I guess early on in my interest in what has come to be called social capital is, to the everyday observer, relationships matter and they influence the terms and level of trade and with whom we trade with.
Yeah. Here in Australia, we have a colloquial term, mates rates, which is the rate you would sell something to a friend compared to someone who isn't. So I think everybody understands that you don't necessarily sell products to or exchange with friends in the same way you would other people. And I guess for an economist, social capital is that's kind of the focus of what social capital is. Whereas as for me, I'm not terribly interested in the exchange of goods and services. I'm far more interested in, what makes groups productive or effective, what helps people to be fulfilled and happy, what allows people to achieve their goals in life. And so for me, social capital is a way to understand why certain groups of people, whether it's a team or a project or an organization, perhaps can achieve the things that they want to achieve collectively, how they can work together to achieve that. Some are very effective and some are less effective. And for me, social capital is that ingredient that often plays such an important role in whether somebody, a group of people are effective.
I early on in my research into social capital, a colleague and I, Steve Hansen, did a study in a class where students were divided into teams, and we measured the social capital between team members by miles of free transportation they would be willing to offer each other. And then we followed the groups through the semester and monitored their progress on projects. And of course, it would be no surprise to you that the teams that exhibited the highest level of social capital, measured by willingness to provide free transportation, clearly outperformed those that didn't seem to be connected.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess we should provide some context for listeners on just how diverse the social capital definitions are. I conducted a review of the literature in 2020, and I found I selected 250 peer-reviewed journal articles, and I looked for how social capital was defined in those studies, and I found 125 different definitions of social capital across those 250 articles. So this gives a real indication of just how much diversity must be out there in the literature. If that sample was 125, I think we could conclude there are many hundreds of different definitions. And they are vastly different. It's not like they're just slight rewordings of the same thing. There is significant difference in what social capital is thought to be. So I guess, where do you see similarities between different definitions? Are there any consistencies that we may see?
The one consistency, or at least the one part of the definition that seems to find its way in a different ways into definitions of social capital, is the importance of relationships. It's not exactly the same, but in my reading of the literature, there seems to be agreement that whatever social capital is, it does have to do with relationships. Now, that leaves a lot of room for differences of opinion and different definition. But at least we could agree, at least I think we can agree that social capital has to do with the way we're connected and the way those connections alter the way we treat each other and conduct business.
Yeah, I would agree. Certainly should be the basis for any interpretation of social capital, I would have thought. But I think there are some exceptions in the literature where definitions focus on something like informal norms or trust and trustworthiness in a sense that isn't necessarily tied to specific relationships. But of course, these concepts can't exist without there being relationships. You can't have informal norms if people aren't having relationships and interacting and developing those norms. So I think we can agree, even if the definition doesn't include specific reference to relationships, I think we can all agree that relationships must be underpinning all interpretations and definitions of what social capital is. So that's the social part. What about the capital part? Do you think there's agreement on that, or any kind of consistency or similarities on the capital side?
I'm not prepared to say. I think there are some that would believe that's an important part of what social capital is. For me, and I think for both of us, I think when I think of capital, I think of a potential to provide something. And so if our view of social capital really is true to the concept of capital, it must represent a potential of something. And if it's social, whatever this potential is, resides in people and their relationships.
There are some things we should easily agree on. One of the things that you've commented on before in some of your past work is that many definitions of social capital don't actually take form of a definition. And one of the common problems or deficiencies in these definitions is that they simply say what it does rather than saying what it is. And so there seems to be some consistencies there that these definitions, that some of which aren't really definitions, but what they're saying is that it facilitates cooperation, or it enables the mobilization of resources, or so is that consistent with capital for a start, and is do you think there is some form of consistency there across the literature?
No, I think there's a lot of different views on whether or not social capital represents a potential or not. I think there's lots of ways to imply that it has a potential. And I'm reminded of when we started several years ago trying to examine the concept of social capital. We held a conference. A large number of social capital scholars. And we provided a survey that listed, I guess, 10 or 12 of the most cited definitions of social capital and asked those at the conference if they agreed or using a Likert scale, which definition seemed to be most accepted. And none of them were. There was no definition that was generally accepted. And I have to believe that's still the state, that if we did a survey and posed 10 of the most successful definitions, if we would find widespread agreement on what is the preferred definition of social capital, some more popular than others, but.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that we wouldn't get much agreement on it. I think over time, certain definitions have risen perhaps to some degree of popularity. But what I think we tend to see in the literature is authors citing several of the popular definitions, but not necessarily settling on any one of them as being the accepted or adopted definition for their particular study. Which is obviously quite a challenge when they're then moving forward without a clear definition of what social capital actually is. So I think that in itself is a challenge that nobody really seems to be particularly happy with the definition that they the definitions that exist and perhaps the definition that they use. And we're still struggling to make progress on that, it seems.
So part of the issue may be that, and we could use the analogy with the six blind men of Hindustan trying to define an elephant. An elephant has lots of different properties and aspects, the tail, the trunk, and the leg and the side and so on. And if you focused on one dimension of the elephant for your definition, you could all be right and all be wrong in the sense that you may have described an element of it as important, but not describe the elephant as a whole. So there may be some of that because of our disciplinary focus. We may want to emphasize one part of social capital rather than another. But I think more importantly is the definition critical in the application or the study of social capital? Does it really produce testable hypotheses that can be examined and lead to some kind of conclusion? Or is it just simply a means of opening the gate and saying, let's study social capital, partly because it's a popular concept? And so I think there is a need to try and connect our definition to our studies and our applications and the hypotheses we're testing. And in some cases, if that doesn't exist, then we may wonder, do we really need the social capital definition, or does some other concept allow us to get to the same place?
Yeah, and I agree with that as well, because if you equate social capital with trust, then what's wrong with simply using trust in your research? Why do we need the concept of social capital? And The same thing would be true if we think it's informal norms, then hey, there's a concept right there that we can use rather than needing to engage with social capital, which potentially has a lot of ideological baggage and complexity and confusion and uncertainty associated with it. So I completely agree with that idea that social capital can be something if we rigorously identify and define what it is. It can have real value in our research. But if we're just going to apply these other wishy-washy cons, not wishy-washy, but if we're going to select these other concepts and simply say that's what social capital is, then we don't need the concept of social capital at all.
So in my thinking about social capital, and if we really believe that the concept is social in nature, then what does that imply? What does that suggest about a definition? And if in my mind, social means that it's about people, that whatever this concept is, social capital, resides in people, and that it somehow suggests how people are connected. So perhaps we can approach the definition of social capital by saying, can we get some agreement about concepts related to social capital without going all the way to a specific part of the elephant that may lead some to be excluded. So I'm saying if it really is social capital, it really does involve relationships between people, how they're connected, and what difference does it make?
Precisely. Well, that's all we've got time for this episode. But in the next episode, we're going to be discussing much more about capital and how social capital is a form of capital, and perhaps that'll help to for us to narrow down what definition of social capital would be most appropriate. It has to be social, clearly, it has to be capital as well. And perhaps we can make some progress by exploring those issues. So, thanks, Lyndon, very much for your time today, and look forward to the next episode.
Thank you, Christian.